enjoying the podcast so far? Feeling a little rumble in your tummy? Well, we have just the solution for you. Head on down to Wings Etc. Niles, located on 11th Street, where great food and good times come together. This fan favorite spot is the perfect place to kick back after the big game or grab a bite with friends. Make sure to check out their daily specials. On Mondays, bone-in and boneless wings for 79 to 99 cents. Tuesday, $5 burgers. Wednesday, 69-cent shrimp. And Thursdays, 79-cent boneless wings. Stop by any day of the week, Sunday through Thursday from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Fridays and Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Whether you're dining in, grabbing takeout, or catching the big game, Wings Etc. has you covered.
They think we're lazy.
They think we're weak-willed.
They think we're entitled.
They think we're selfish.
They think we don't care about anybody but ourselves.
We are compassionate.
We are resourceful.
We are capable.
We want to make a difference in the world.
We are underestimated.
July 20th, 1975, in Niles, Michigan, was a normal day. People were walking their dogs, having fun on summer vacation, and just having a good time until 5:30 p.m. Janice Sanders, a 24-year-old woman, had clocked into her shift at work. When she clocked out, she would never be seen again. Since then, the police have investigated over the years, from writing 600 pages of case files to putting people on trial for testimonies and immunity statements. But no significant progress has been made. Searches have been conducted, but again, no significant evidence was found. Even after 40 years, police have reopened the case and searched properties. Me and my group of other investigative journalism students have been working tirelessly to make sure Janice Sanders' story is heard. Investigative journalism is a class where me and other students find local cold cases to try and make progress on or even solve them. Our assignment? To find a case ourselves, do research, and pitch it to the class in hopes to get other students on board to investigate and hopefully solve it. What was just a simple assignment from our teacher, Mr. Ruff, telling us to find a cold case, is now a case that me and my group have spent months trying to uncover and make progress on. Every day, we are uncovering new information from our case files, and now we get to take you through our story of what we've done. My name is Elena, I'm a junior, and this is my group.
My name is Avery, and I'm a sophomore.
My name is Simone, and I'm a senior.
My name is Miriam, and I'm a senior.
My name is Monte, and I'm a senior.
My name is Alexis, and I'm a junior.
Through this podcast, we will all take you through our journey investigating the disappearance of Janice Sanders, our thought processes, reactions, and even firsthand accounts from real people associated with the case will all be in here to help with Janice's story to be told, along with everyone involved in the case.
Welcome to the story of Janice Sanders.
When I searched up cold cases, the first link to pop up was the Western Michigan University Cold Case Program. WMU's Cold Case Program is an esteemed program that solves cold cases. I saw so many names on the list, and it was hard to choose just one. However, when I saw Janice Sanders' name, my interest piqued. A 24-year-old young woman that had vanished without a trace, missing for nearly 50 years. I knew I wanted to help find her, so I started my research.
When Elena discovered the case, we had brief discussions about it, and she seemed very interested to progress further. During these discussions, I had my own case, the Ann Pates case, still in the back of my mind because I was still early in discovery. But as I found out more about Janice, I realized my resources weren't needed for Ann Pates case anymore, and I could further dive into Janice's case with Elena.
As soon as I found Janice's case, I knew I wanted to work on it for the whole year. I spent hours at home digging deep into the internet, trying to find sites that would help me get as much information about this case as possible. As I was researching the case, all of the evidence seemed to be set in stone. However, I always felt like there was something more to the case than just what I was reading online. All of the websites said the same thing, just another missing girl assumed to be a homicide. With the evidence I found, it was like I knew the whole case after only doing a little bit of research. But while thinking about the amount of evidence that was online for everyone to read, I thought of another question. Why hasn't this case been solved if there's so much evidence online? If so many people have read and/or published these things, that means countless people from around the world know about Janice's case. How has no one been found guilty, and how has Janice never been found? With those thoughts in my head, I knew there was more to this story than what could be found on the internet. So I started breaking away from believing everything I was reading, and I started doing my own research that was different from what the articles were telling me. I read between the lines of the articles and dug deeper into little things. In doing so, I found lots of evidence, and I finally felt that I was ready to pitch my case. I knew everyone else had interesting cases that they wanted to pitch, so I was nervous about pitching mine and made sure to do lots of research. Once the day came to pitch our cases, I gave the class a lecture about Janice and her case.
So Janice Sanders was 24 when she went missing, and she was reported missing on July 21st, 1975. She was last seen at work. She worked at Pete's Patio, and she was a waitress there. She had an ex-boyfriend, and he was in the restaurant when she worked there the night she went missing, and that he was the last person to be seen with her, and so people think that he did it. And so I was researching the boyfriend, and I came across another.
Thankfully, six other students were interested, and we started our research on Janice's full story.
When Elena was pitching her case, I noticed more people than just myself had shown interest in Janice's case. And as it came down to choosing our final few cases, the biggest group our class had was for Janice Sanders.
I wasn't originally in this class at the beginning of the year, so I had a later introduction to the case. When I chose this class, I already had an interest in crime and missing person cases on TV and things of that sort. Mr. Ruff had all the group leaders explain their cases to me in a short summary and let me pick which group I wanted to join. I chose the Janice Sanders case. When I was introduced, I felt like Janice needs justice. It just didn't sit right with me that her case had just been glanced over. So I joined the group, and that's got me to where we are now.
When Elena was explaining the case to everyone, I just loved her enthusiasm and I loved how she was explaining the case. Not to mention that this case just seemed so cut and done, like we knew who did it and like we knew what happened, yet Janice has never been found and no one has ever been prosecuted for her case. So I wanted to try and get some justice for her family. I think a big thing for me was realizing she isn't just a name on a news article. She's an actual person whose family misses her and that her children have been left without a mom and that they deserve closure. And I wanted to try and work and give them what they deserve.
When Elena mentioned that Janice was from our town, that's what sparked my interest.
This is like really interesting. It's really cool that she lives like in Niles. Like,
I know.
Isn't that crazy?
Like, yeah.
We literally live like in this. We literally live in the same city as her. Like, that's,
I know.
Actually, like,
it's like a full circle moment.
Right.
I slowly started switching gears onto this case. Everyone in the group really thought this case was interesting, and that's why we formed such a dedicated group to help solve this case. It's helped a lot that everyone has pitched in as much as they could.
Janice K. Rupert was born on September 27, 1950, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She lived at 909 Diamond Street with her mother, Retha Lou Williams Rupert, and at least three siblings, Alan, Sandy, and Retha Jr. These could also all be half-siblings. This childhood was filled with poverty and family damage and traumas, so at the age of 12, she was taken in by relatives, Ray and Joanna McCulley. They saw Janice and wanted a better life for her. They were also childless and lived hundreds of miles away in Michiana, which is the Michigan-Indiana border. Talking about the area of southwest Michigan and northwest Indiana. These circumstances offered her a perfect opportunity for a fresh start while she was still young. So here's a little family history. I don't know about you, but I like family trees and genealogy. I just think it's pretty interesting. So, Kizzy and James Williams, they were married and they had two kids, Archie and Desi. So, Archie married Charlotte McCulley and they had Retha Lou, who is Janice's mom. And Kizzy and James' other child, Desi, married Jesse and they had Ray, who married Joanna. So, what this means is that Janice's mother, Retha Lou, and Ray are first cousins. So Ray was Janice's first cousin once removed. Now, let's talk about the travels of Janice Rupert. While her home life with Mr. and Mrs. McCulley was much improved from that which she had in Pittsburgh, Janice and her family moved around quite a bit. Starting out when she was 12 years old, she lived on Owen Street in South Bend, Indiana, with Ray and Joanna for about a year. They then moved to Oak Manor in Niles, Michigan for another year. After that, they moved to Ardmore Trail in South Bend for about a year and a half to 2 years. Then, the family moved to Los Angeles, California. Janice stayed for about 2 weeks before moving back to live with the Sanders family in South Bend for a few months. She then went back to LA to stay with her family for about 3 months. The family then moved back to the Michiana area for good. At this point, Janice is still in high school. She was on the move during her freshman-sophomore year, but I think she attended LaSalle High School in South Bend while she was living with the Sanders family. By her junior year, the family was back in Niles, and she attended Brandywine High School, which is our high school. We actually didn't know she went to our high school until we talked with James Sanders, Janice's son. So then, we were looking through old yearbooks trying to find anything about her. And in her senior class yearbook, we came across class prophecies. We found Janice's, and it said, quote, "Janice Rupert will still be happily married." Well, come to find out, Janice got married to Jim Sanders when she was 17, so she was still in high school. After Janice graduated, she lived with Jim's family while he served in the military in Korea. I think this was the Korean DMZ conflict or the Second Korean War. Jim got back in 1969 and was stationed in Virginia, so the couple moved to Newport News, Virginia. While they were there, Janice became pregnant with their first child. It was a girl named Dina. Jim, Janice, and Dina moved back to South Bend in the fall of 1970. Their second child, James, was born in December of 1972. Unfortunately, in the early months of 1973, Jim and Janice's marriage came to an end. The divorce was finalized in the summer, and Jim remarried by the fall. However, Jim was not the only one moving on quickly. Shortly after the divorce, Jim and a couple buddies saw Janice with a man. Worse yet, it was one of Jim's best friends, the best man at his wedding.
As Miriam mentioned before, Janice actually went to our school, which shocked us as a group, but also individually. In our school, we have individual photos of graduating seniors dating back to 1963, which was very fortunate for us seeing as her graduation year was 1968. It was shocking to see an older picture of her and to know that we walked the same halls as she did 56 years ago and participate in some of the same activities as us. It made this case so much more personal for us, and it gave us more motivation to try and solve her case. Later, we discovered that Janice was a waitress at a local Italian bar and restaurant called Pete's Patio. She started working there on July 15, 1975, in secret. No one knew she had gotten a job there until a few days later on July 20, 1975. The fact that no one knew about her new job was a little unsettling for me at first. Just because sometimes when a new opportunity comes, a normal human reaction is to tell people about it and be excited. It just didn't sit right with me that she didn't tell anyone, which shows that she was maybe hiding from someone or even hiding something.
July 20th, 1975 seemed like a normal day for Janice Sanders. That morning, her boyfriend, Kenneth Klein, had planned to take her and a few friends to a White Sox versus Milwaukee baseball game. However, Janice had to work that evening, so they made plans to meet up after work. Kenneth assumed that Janice would get off work early and had arranged to pick her up from her mother's house later that night. As mentioned, Janice worked at Pete's Patio, an Italian restaurant and bar, as a waitress. She clocked in a little later than usual that day, around 5:30 p.m. That evening, she was working with several colleagues, Brenda McMillan, the bartender, which is important for later, Daniel Halton, a dishwasher, Margie Steinberg, who I believe was another waitress, Robert Brittany, a kitchen helper, and Randy Riley, the head chef. In the workplace, Janice mostly kept to herself. While she would occasionally have brief conversations with her coworkers, she didn't share much about her personal life outside of work. She had only been employed there for less than a week, so the other employees hadn't gotten to know her well. Everything seemed normal for Janice that night until around 10:30 p.m. A suspicious man entered the bar and began acting oddly towards her. This brings us back to Brenda McMillan, the bartender. She was the one serving the suspicious man, and according to her, the man was acting erratically, frequently getting up quickly and leaving the restaurant, only to return moments later. Brenda initially didn't think much of it, assuming the man was simply going outside to check on his dog. However, she did notice that he was constantly bothering Janice whenever she walked past him to go to the kitchen window. Other employees also observed the man bothering Janice, but she seemed unbothered, so they let it slide. Later that night, Kenneth arrived at Janice's mother's house to pick her up, but noticed that her car wasn't there. He then drove to Pete's Patio, where he parked next to Janice's car and entered the restaurant. Kenneth sat down at the bar, just 3 seats away from the suspicious man. Janice didn't wave at Kenneth, but gave him a small smile instead. A little after midnight, Janice clocked out of her shift and exited through the back door. At the same time, the suspicious man practically ran out the front door. That would be the last time anyone saw Janice Sanders. She was reported missing on July 21st, 1975. Daniel Halton, the dishwasher, peeked out the back door just after Janice clocked out and noticed her talking to a man. Not only were they conversating, but they were standing about 10 to 15 feet apart from each other. Daniel could tell that Janice appeared uncomfortable with the encounter, and he felt sympathy for her, sensing that she didn't want to be talking to this man. Daniel Halton was the last person to see Janice Sanders alive. It's heartbreaking to consider what the 19-year-old might have been thinking as he watched this unsettling interaction, only to later find out she went missing. Meanwhile, Kenneth remained at the bar waiting for Janice to finish her shifts so they could hang out. Eventually, he was told that Janice had clocked out some time ago. Disappointed, Kenneth stayed a little longer and left around 1 a.m., As he exited, he noticed that Janice's car was still parked next to his, untouched. Weeks later, Janice's car was found about 3 miles away, in the parking lot of the Holiday Inn. How did her car end up there? And what time was it moved? How was it possible that no one saw it being moved? And why didn't Kenneth chase after her? While I may not have all the answers to these questions, there is one revelation that will surprise you. The suspicious man was actually Janice Sanders' ex-boyfriend. Janice and her ex had been in an on-and-off relationship for 1.5 years. According to the statement from Janice's mother, Janice had continued seeing her ex throughout her divorce process, despite being advised not to. This is more opinionated than fact, but it's disturbing to think that Kenneth, who knew about Janice's ex, didn't take any action. Why didn't he chase after Janice when he saw her leaving in such a hurry? Why didn't he intervene when he saw Janice being harassed all night by this man? Kenneth later stated that because Janice's car was still parked next to his after she had left, he believed she had chosen to get back together with her ex. But does that really justify his lack of action? It's troubling to consider the possibility that Kenneth might have known more than he let on. Janice's body has never been found, There are no murder weapons, no crime scene evidence, and no physical items that could provide insight into what happened. This case remains cold. However, as passionate young investigative journalists with a deep personal connection to this case, our goal is to bring awareness to this unsolved mystery. We want to encourage you to care about this case as much as we do. We have dedicated countless hours to researching every aspect of this investigation, and our mission is to ensure that Janice's story is heard and not forgotten.
Thank you for coming with us through the start of our journey investigating the disappearance of Janice Sanders. We have so much more to unpack for you in the next episodes, but until then, goodbye.
Underestimated, Jane Jay was researched, written, and produced by Avery, Elena, Miriam, Simone, Monse, and Lexi. Intro music by Haley, all other music by Shane Yoder. Our show artwork was created by Chelsea, and our series artwork was created by Lexi. The Underestimated podcast is a production created in the Brandywine Community Schools Broadcasting CTE program. We want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to our community sponsors for supporting us and helping fund our work. Please make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast player, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Underestimated.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.